and welcome back to Bourbon Barrel Talk. I'm your host, Scott Minton. Today, we are back in the Brock Bourbon Bar, and we are doing a virtual interview. It's the first one we've done in a long time.
Yeah.
And we're going to spend some time with our friend Isaac Winter out at High West Distillery. How are you doing today, Isaac?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Good. First of all, welcome to the show. And before we get started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get in the industry? What does your day-to-day activities look like? Things to that nature.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been part of the High West team since September of 2017. I come from the beer industry, actually. So maybe taking a step back even further, I've got a chemistry degree, and I decided that I didn't want to live in a lab for my whole life. And so started to look around for some options. There's a brewery down the street that was looking for some help. So I started volunteering there after classes and just fell in love with fermentation. I learned about this program in Scotland called Harriet Watt University. They've got a master's in brewing and distilling science program out there. So I took my then girlfriend, now wife, out to Scotland for a year and spent some time learning about brewing and distilling and a little bit about raw material production. And then came back, worked in the beer industry for a couple of years, but then made the jump to the dark side and never looked back.
It sounds very interesting. It's funny. I'd read up a few things on you, and I'm a nerd out for a minute here because I was a home brewer for years. So I saw that you'd done some work on with Brett and Micey's, fermentation and things to that nature. And I was kind of, I guess, audited. I didn't realize because they said you went to Scotland. I just assumed you were working for a whiskey industry over there. But I was always like, well, that's lambics. That's, all these different, beers that I would typically think of as sours, gozes, different things like that.
And, oh, yeah.
And me, I'm a big home brewer for years and years, and I made like ESBs, different things like that. And one of the things I used was a London ESB yeast and trying to, figure out the best way to make things. And I messed around with Brett a little bit. So I was like, wow, so how did that tie to the bourbon industry? but you kind of already answered that. So it's kind of funny. But have you ever messed with like weird yeast strands, like when you're trying to do distilling or things to that nature? Like I've heard different industry, like I think it was Ghost Coast used Saison there for a little bit. So
yeah, at High West, we've played around with like a Trappist yeast in the past.
Okay.
We've played around with some other proprietary strains that have like really wild fusel oil content. We once upon a time made a light oat whiskey at our still in downtown Park City. And we played around with some yeast that had some kind of tropical ester profiles that were really interesting. Didn't translate super well to rye whiskey, but for that particular application, they're really fun. But that's like the stuff that gets me super excited is I love geeking out on that stuff. So I appreciate the
I'm glad that you do, because like I said, it's one of these funny things. When I started the podcast, I got into bourbon a few years ago because I couldn't drink beer anymore, only because I kept gaining weight. Like I was just putting on pounds as fast as I could drink it. And I literally kept between 10 and 15 gallons in my fridge at all times. I always had one of my ESBs, a Kolsch that we did. And then we would, rotate different stouts and porters and all kinds of different things. So crazy. So I appreciate the fact that you came from the brewing industry. That makes it nice and neat. So
awesome.
So tell us about your favorite expressions. Like when you've been to High West, like I like the Burr Rye. I like Midwinters, what's the other double?
Double Rye.
Yeah, double Rye.
Campfire fan here.
Yeah.
See, and I'm not a Scotch guy, so the campfire is not necessarily my cup of tea, but Nick loves it, so I mean...
Oh, I love it too.
That's what I always say. It's different. Well, Barbara says it more than anybody else. Different strokes for different folks, right?
Like, well, it's to each their own.
Yeah.
That's my little catchphrase, always.
So,
yeah, I mean, we can touch on a couple of those. So, I mean, my daily drinker at our house is Rendezvous Rye.
Okay.
So this is, 5-6 year old rye expression. A lot of the really hot spicy rye notes that we're getting from the MGP distillate have rounded off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You bring this like really lovely baking spice note, and then to that particular blend, we've added a little bit of pot still whiskey, which from our own stills, which I think adds this really lovely base note to the blend, and brings a little bit of roundness. So that is I love it neat. I love it on ice. Love it in cocktails. Campfire holds a special place in my heart. Also, that was like one of the first whiskeys I tasted, you know, back before I started with the team, and just I thought it was so interesting. And you know, we've kept that recipe basically the same since its inception. In 2023, we did make a little bit of a change. And so now 100% of the rye that's in Campfire comes from our own stills. So we've moved away from MGP there, and really found an interesting home for our big impactful distillate with Campfire, because you know, got the smokiness from the scotch, you got some big old bourbon characteristics, and so that pot, that punchy pot still character, I think is fits right at home there. And then honestly, I know I'm stealing the thunder a little bit, but the bottle of the
bond, keep going,
that we just you know, released has been super fun, and I think especially for my teams, you know, we've been making whiskey on our own still since 2007. We have 1,000-liter still in downtown Park City at our restaurant. And then in 2015, we opened up our production facility in Wanship, Utah. So it's about 20 minutes up the road from Park City. We've got a 6,000-liter Forsyth still at that location. We make about 146,000 proof gallons there annually. So that's something like, I don't know, 2,300 whiskey barrels, something like that. And so we make a decent amount of whiskey there. Our production is pretty split between bourbon, rye, and then we are making a little bit of American single malt also to support our High Country single malt brand, which is kind of fun. That's been another way to kind of tip the hat to the Scotland educational heritage, but then sort of try and bring an American spin to it.
Okay. So you've been a brewer first, right? Now you've moved into the distilling thing. Is there a particular style that you prefer? Like, what was Scotch your first love, or did you kind of move directly into bourbon from that beer, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I drink bourbon in cocktails, and that was sort of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I went to Harriet Watt in Scotland to be a brewer. And while I was there, I was part of the Harriet Watt student-led Malt Whiskey Association. And so every other Friday, you'd pay £5, and they'd put five different whiskeys in front of you from all over the island. And it was this really, really interesting way to get a deep dive into Scotch whiskey and have somebody, you know, put five different expressions from Speyside, five different lowland expressions, five different, you know, Isla expressions, and be able to walk you through, this is what we're tasting, this is, you know, some interesting details about the distillery, and it was kind of this really quick crash course. So I fell in love with whiskey through Scotch malt whiskey, I think. Mm-hmm. And then coming back, I'm a Salt Lake City boy, born and raised, and so High West was always in my backyard, and got interested in American whiskey kind of via that route.
So before we dive into the actual bottle to bond, the rye whiskey, and then some other, you know, uninteresting, which I call uninteresting because the fact that I like to get to know people, right? I'm a people person. Mm-hmm. What do you do for fun? Like, what are the things that Isaac does when he turns off the switch at, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night when he leaves the distillery?
Yeah. I've got two little kids. So I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, so they keep me pretty busy.
Say no more,
so,
you're done.
Absolutely. You know,
that's right. I love running. You know, Utah is like a great access to outdoor sports. So I love trail running in our hills up here. I worked at a ski climbing bike shop in all through high school and college. So I love to ski and don't rock climb quite so much anymore. But, you know, love that also when I can get out.
Good deal. All right, let's dive into the bottled and bond.
I'm ready.
We've all poured one open, and I'll let Barbara take the next question, or Nick. I mean, I've been hogging the mic tonight, so
it's all good. I got a couple things here. I noticed over the past probably year or two that we've been getting a lot of more of the double rye picks, and some of those picks have been finished in just general different barrels. What was some of the inspiration and in how you're kind of matching up those different either wine or I think I saw Oloroso Sherry, you know, release too. Mm-hmm. How does that work for you whenever you try to pair up these?
Yeah, so the program you're speaking to, I think we call Barrel Select, our single, it's our single barrel program. We think about this as really our R&D playground for our blending team, our production team. And so some of our best known brands like Midwinter Night's Dram, Yippie Kaye, things like that have come out of this program. And so, you know, we're at High West really interested in finishing and kind of the different flavor levers that we can pull by adding some of those barrel types. And so, you know, some of it is what we can get our hands on. Some of it is a little bit more selective than that. So we are pretty close with Beehive Distilling down the street in Salt Lake City. They make a really interesting, impactful gin. So we took some of their ex-Chardonnay barrels that held their gin that has a lot of sage and rose in it, and then finished double rye in it. That was like, you know, one of the, that was maybe one that we were a little bit more, you know, directive with, or like we were picky with, but wanted to pair up the botanicals in this gin barrel with our botanicals that we're seeing in our distillate. That was one of the, you know, my favorite barrel select offerings that we've ever released. I thought it was super interesting. The Oloroso, I think, lends itself really well to bourbon and rye. I think it's beautiful. It's a no-brainer in my mind. And so when we think about finishing whiskey, we generally start with the blend and try and identify, you know, what are some things that we really love in this blend and how can we emphasize those? How can we support those? Or maybe, you know, how can we add some kind of dissonance to it? And so, for instance, you know, Rendezvous has these really interesting red fruit esters, I think, in it. And it lends itself so well to port. And then, voila, we have Midwinter Night's Dram. And so kind of taking a step back and looking at your distillate and appreciating what are the nuances that I really like as a distiller, and how can I, you know, emphasize those. That's kind of the approach that we take with finishing.
Yeah. So you brought up sourcing a little bit before we dive into the bottle and bottle. I said I wasn't going to talk anymore, but anyway, here I go.
You always hog it.
I know I do. anyway, so you mentioned the fact that you had sourced. You guys used some stuff from MGP. So you said right now you're moving away from that because your distillate's getting of age. Is there still going to be some products that you're holding back in reserve that you will still continue to use that until maybe your distillate gets to be 8, 9, 10 years old?
Yeah, maybe let me qualify that a little bit. So, you know, we have sourced and been very transparent about sourcing from the very beginning. And
one of the things we love.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's something that I find to be really important about the way that we run our business. But I think that the MO for High West has always been impactful, interesting blends, right? So we're always going to go out to the industry, go out to the market, and find really interesting distillate wherever it comes from. And so that might be Kentucky, that might be Indiana. You know, it might be stuff that we're producing on our own stills to get the widest breadth of levers that we can pull. So to use an analogy, just bear with me. You know, we talk about if you were to paint a masterpiece and only use the color blue, you could do some interesting things, but it would be blue at the end of the day, right? And so we think about these different distillate streams from Pot, from Column, from Kentucky, from Utah as different colors on our palette. And so we like the different texture. We like the different, you know, blending and color profile that we get from using a whole bunch of different distillate streams. So the release of Bottle and Bond, super, super exciting. It's a way for us to acknowledge, you know, our distilling teams, our distilling capabilities on site, and celebrate our kind of the quality of our distillate. But it doesn't mark some, you know, massive shift in the way that High West will produce whiskey. I think that you will start to see it seep out into more products, right? We've been producing bourbon in-house since 2020, we'll say. And so I think in the next 2 or 3 years, you'll start to see some bourbon releases from us. But Double Rye, you know, that flavor profile was built on MGP, you know, 3-year-old or so, column still distillate, and it will continue to be that way.
Awesome. Kind of as a follow-up for that, whenever you get your distillate, the first part of the question is, whenever you get your distillate, is it usually already aged if you do source it, or do you go ahead and let it age there and then purchase it aged and then put it in your rick house? And then with your existing second part of the question is going to be, with your own distillate, how does the unique seasons for Utah, you know, play into a factor for your aging, both your summers and sometimes lack of winters? But I, as I said, Park City is probably right close to actually having a probably decent blend of summer and winters, as kind of we do in our area.
Yeah. So the first part of that, the sourcing question. So we do both. So we contract with distilleries, and then we also will go out to the market and purchase like discrete lots of whiskey. We talk about it as being opportunistic buys, right? So if somebody, you know, is a little bit long and 10-year-old bourbon, you know, we might buy it up if it fits our flavor profile. So we've got both long-standing contracts and kind of individual interesting lots. When we purchase new make spirit, let's say, we always request samples of the distillate, and we have it written into our contracts that, you know, we can, you know, approve or kind of disapprove of the spirit. And so we take sensory really, really seriously at High West. It's something that I do a lot. We sit in the blending lab a lot and, you know, review the merits of new make spirit, of blended spirit, of components that are coming onto our site. So we do a little bit of both. As far as the maturation piece, we typically will purchase lots of whiskey or new make distillate streams or whatever that are going into barrels and age it on site at the distillery. They, you know, just from a cost perspective, like their rick house and their warehousing piece is usually the best game in town. And then we focus our own barrel aging efforts in Utah on our own make distillate. So we've got a couple different palletized high density barrel aging warehouses in Utah in the Salt Lake area that are all High West rye, High West malt, High West bourbon. So when we need whiskey out to kind of, you know, make double rye, make rendezvous, what have you, we will request that specific lots of barrels be dumped, and then they get put on a 6,000 gallon tanker and they get sent out to High West. And then we've got a whole array of 35,000 gallon storage tanks out behind our facility. Wow. And so we always are filling a tank at the same time we're emptying it. And so that helps us manage any kind of flavor drift really, really tightly. And so that's something that, you know, I really value about our spirit is, you know, the really tight, we'll call it like the flavor swim lane, right? The allowable mm-hmm. flavor drift. Mm-hmm. We try and keep a really tight lid on that. And so having those big tanks out behind our distillery allow us to kind of manage seasonal variations and things from the other distillers. And then the last part of that question, keep me honest here, was Utah weather. So when we talk about
real quick,
Utah
before you
weather,
dive into that,
please. Yeah. Please,
let me
please.
Piggyback that. How also does the elevation, right? You guys are, you know, 2 miles, 3 miles above sea level, right? So elevation has to do something with aging as well. So if you don't mind, with the seasonality, right? Let's add the complexity of what the elevation does.
Yeah. So where I'm sitting right now, I'm in the Salt Lake Valley at our facility in the valley. We're at about 4,500 feet or so, and our distillery in Wanship is something like 7,500 feet above sea level, something like that. So pretty distinct elevations. In Wanship, we very regularly will see temperatures of like negative 10 degrees Fahrenheit in the mornings when we get to the still house. And then in the summer times, it'll hit 100 degrees for a couple weeks a year. Wow. So we have this 110 degree temperature variance throughout the year. So I think that's very impactful.
Yeah.
We also are very, very dry here. And so just, I guess, for instance, you know, we're tasting through some lots of High West pot still rye from 2016 the other day. And we fill normally, you know, around 110, and we were tasting lots that were like 128, 130, 138, something like that. So we get like, can have pretty significant proof increase. Mm-hmm. I think that personally, I care more about the temperature fluctuations and the humidity than I do the elevation. That's just something that I focus more on. But I would be so interested to hear somebody else's take on that.
Well, so we've done multiple of these interviews. We actually was lucky enough that somebody came in from out west. They were in Colorado, mm-hmm. and they said, awesome. You know, just being so high up in the mountains, like, just made a massive difference in how high the octane got. I guess the angel share, because of the air being so thin or something, was a lot more than they anticipated, and, like, they were having some hazmat stuff. But your barrel entry proof is a little bit lower. Didn't you say 110?
It is.
Okay.
It mm-hmm. is, yeah. Yeah, interesting. I'd love to learn a little bit more on that. I mean, Colorado is pretty dry also, so, who knows?
Absolutely. So let's dive into this. I've been cheating. I've already been sniffing and sipping a little bit.
There with you.
So what do you got? Tell us a little bit about this expression. You know, it's bottled in bond, so that means it's all from the same season, the same warehouse, all that good stuff, right? 4, 5, 6-year-old. What do we got here? And the one unique thing, which me and Barbara are massive fans of, we're rye people. Mm. It's 100% rye. Awesome. I saw it was like 80% regular rye and then 20% malted rye. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. Let's dive in. We'll call them the trading card stats. How about that?
So, I love it.
We like to make 100% rye pot still distillate on, mm-hmm. on site. And, you know, we think that's it's obviously very impactful.
Yeah.
And it allows us to kind of provide an interesting counterpoint to some of the MGP distillate and other distillate that we're sourcing. So, you hit it right on the head. This is 100% rye. Our mash bill for this is 80% raw rye and 20% malted rye.
Okay.
We, for this particular expression, we're using Gatineau rye. And we sourced it from a broker. So I unfortunately don't know exactly where it came from, but more recently we've partnered with Mountain Malt, outside of Idaho Falls, and they're growing, Bono rye for us.
Okay.
Which is just 3 hours from the distillery. So I'm trying to reduce a little bit of food miles there. But we really like the profile that we've been getting from Bono rye. So I'm again stealing the thunder a little bit, but as we continue to release some of these bottled and bond expressions, you may see a little bit of a rye profile change. Okay. This is 5-year-old distillate. So we pulled from the second season in 2018. So that's July through December. And, you know, I think as kind of like a little bit of history, this was right before we installed new fermenters, grain handling, a mill, a new semi-automated bottling line, a new blending space, and a new rick house. So it was like right before we had this big inflection point.
Okay.
And so, kind of interesting, you know, nostalgic piece there, I think.
Yeah.
But I sort of think about bottled and bond as like the spirit's answer to the wine vintage, right? So we've been making the same distillate with the same mash bill, same yeast strain for a couple of years now, right? Since, you know, 2016, we make other things, but with this particular distillate strain. And so as you're putting these blends together, you know, you have the same soul of the whiskey expression over expression, but you're gonna have these like little different personality ticks along the way. And that's as a blender, as a distiller, as a product maker, I think those are really fun ways to differentiate a product like Bottled and Bond year over year, is to kind of celebrate some of those different personality traits, much like we do with Midwinters, much mm-hmm. like we do with Burai, things like that.
Okay. Kind of the nuances.
Exactly.
Okay.
I tell you, I really enjoy a fruit forward rye, man. Yeah. And the nose on this thing is just got so much nice, like light fruit to it. I'm getting like a pear or an apple type.
Yeah.
You know, smell on it. And then there's like some really, really nice baking spice on this thing. So
yeah, I'm getting a little bit of almost like a apple blossom orchard. Like you may be walking through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some florally notes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Cinnamon, nutmeg.
So it's very delicate, very nice.
Yeah. So, in the area where the distillery is, we sit on this hillside, and in the summertime we get these big wildflower blooms.
Okay.
And who knows if it's true or not, but okay. I get a little bit of like almost like beeswax, like these interesting floral notes that pull through. And okay. So I think, you know, maybe it's like the emotional attachment to some of the aroma and flavor profiles, but like it instantly brings me back to those summer days, like looking out to that hill when you're running the still. And I think that's kind of a cool memory.
We always talk that's what bourbon ties us to, right? Bourbon and rye, things like that. When we're drinking, it ties to memories. Like Barbara will always be my grandma's apple pie or, you know, yes. different things like that. And for me, totally. Like when you start talking about these floral things, like in mm-hmm. Indiana, like honeysuckle yeah. just grows everywhere, everywhere, right? And that's what mm-hmm. I kind of get is like some of those nice, like light floral notes, things to that nature. And then the palate just like, oddly enough, I mean, I'm getting like almost like an apple cookie. Like it's really, really weird. Like it's mm-hmm. got some really nice complexity to it. And then the nutmeg is just punching me in the mouth. Boom.
I love that. Yeah. And I love nutmeg. Nutmeg is one of my favorite baking spices. It's got kind of that sweet, kind of punchy in the face. Really kind of an interesting correlation between it.
Yeah.
But I love a good spicy rye to begin with. Some people don't, and that's fine. I'm not some people.
Different strokes, different folks.
Bingo.
And the funny thing is you brought up like that beeswax. Like mm-hmm. I'm getting kind of that honey on the finish.
Yeah.
Like it's like that dry yeah. sweetness that's kind of hitting the back of the palate and mm-hmm. really, really on the finish. And it's giving that nice little, I guess it's a Utah hug, right?
Like,
yeah. That's right. There you go.
I don't know, but the legs are pretty beautiful.
They are.
Yep, that's what I was just looking at was the legs. Yeah. You know, the viscosity and the mouthfeel is very nice.
Yeah.
And the kind of that spice just lingers in the back mid palate just mm-hmm. very long. And that's mm-hmm. very enjoyable.
Color's kind of a maple syrupy type,
yeah.
you know, color to it, I think. A little bit darker, yeah, but it's in that ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about barrels for a second, I guess, you know,
yeah.
jumping on the color aspect. So we love working with ISC and Speyside for our barrels. So we get number 4 char for this particular distillate stream. And, you know, really, really love the profile that we've gotten with those. So 100% of this product was aged in number 4 char classic barrels for 5 years. Mm.
I was about to ask what was the char level. You stole the question.
Stole the thunder.
I'm way ahead of that.
Absolutely.
So what are you getting on this? Like as yeah. far as like the taste, the nose, the finish, like what are you getting? Like we're amateurs, right? You're the professional over here. We're just Joe Schmo in the middle of anywhere.
I think that the things that I like to celebrate about this is the interesting spice profile and kind of, you know, we talked about like contrarian notes or like dissonant notes that you can add in blends. I think where this is interesting is I get a lot of like sage and like rosemary, thyme, things like that,
okay.
rather than like wintergreen, menthol, something that you might get from like an Indiana, you know, rye or something like that. So when we talk about blending spice profiles for Rendezvous, for Double Rye, for Midwinters, things like that, that's what we're really looking for. So a different spice profile is something that I like to celebrate about this.
I was going to say the thing that you said, sage, and as soon as you said it, I was like, dang it, that's what it was. That's what I was looking for. Like it reminded me, like my mother-in-law's sister makes this weird like Thanksgiving like stuffing. And it has like apples and sage and pork and all this other stuff. And that's what it reminded me of. I was like, why does it taste like Thanksgiving to me? Like, I'm literally sitting here thinking, like, why does it taste like Thanksgiving? And I could not come up with, like, what is that note? And as soon as you said sage, I was like, damn it, that's it. Like,
Like,
I've got it. Poof. Like,
bingo.
And it's funny because that's what it was reminding me of. Because, like yeah. I said, I was getting that apple flavor and I was getting this. Obviously, mm-hmm. I wouldn't get any pork, but, like, no. just all the other stuff that came in the you know, the stuffing that, you know, Aunt Linda makes. So it was, like, one of those funny things. So I'm turning to Barbara over here. Aunt Linda's blah, 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 and everything else, so.
Don't get me started on like, the name Linda, though.
Those forced memories that you get from you know, smells and from yeah. taste every once in a while can be super, super powerful.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, I must say, you had mentioned like your double rye and the way that you kind of are going to those certain non-evergreen, and I'll just outright say mint. And I will say, Scott and I are not mint fans. And so this was one of those early hitters that I actually introduced the rendezvous ride to my wife, I think right around 3 or 4 years ago, was the first time that I had picked up one on a recommendation from somebody. And I really enjoyed it because it was a really good rye that didn't have that mint in it. And as soon as my wife had it, I think she ended up killing the bottle. And I had to go buy another one the next day.
It wouldn't surprise me. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm about to go in for my third glass already. I think this thing just is fantastic.
It's absolutely right on.
The delicate fruit, things like that. But we'll let you go ahead and go because we keep interrupting you. So we apologize, Isaac.
I was going to move to the palate. I think, you know, there's like an interesting like molasses note, kind of this like dark, rich sugar. I don't find it to be cloying, right? We talked about the sweetness. It's there. It's supportive, but it's not dominant in my mind.
Right.
And another thing, you know, on the finish, the viscosity is something else that we talked about. And that's another thing that I find to be really useful in our pastel distillate is adding the base note and adding some depth and some texture to blends, you know, in varying amounts, right? A lot of it, you can get like a really impactful change in viscosity or change in mouthfeel. If you just start teaspooning it in, you can kind of add enough that you don't even know it's there almost, but it's just kind of cradling you through the dram.
Yeah.
Oh, the viscosity is absolutely, as I said, kind of mentioned earlier, really nice. It's a great mouthfeel. Now, I'm going to follow up with what you kind of said in your pot still. Now, there's been a lot of people going to the column stills and trying to up their production from the production standpoint. You keep mentioning the pot still. Let me rephrase it. Do you think that the pot still grants more flavor or viscosity in your favor versus the column still?
I think it's different. I think it's, for me, I find pot still to be a little bit more impactful. I mean, think about just the actual engineering of it. With a column still, you have all of those plates. You're able to get a lot of really precise separation. So you can get something that's like very spicy, but very focused. With a pot still, you know, we have this, we have a declining proof. So we don't hold it the same proof throughout the distillation. And so, you know, we see this pretty dramatic change over our heart's cut, where you get these really beautiful, like, we call them apricot blossoms at the beginning, and then, you know, through this really beautiful botanical spice, and then right at the end you start pulling over all of the cereal, and I think that cereal adds a really interesting base note. And so our job as distillers is to, you know, get just enough of those apricot blossoms and just enough of the cereal bordering on, right, cardboard wet dog, right? That's that tails cut. That you can create some sort of harmony and balance throughout your distillate cut. And so to me, I find that you get something that's a little bit more complex. I love pot still, but I think it's a tool of the trade. And I appreciate that we have the ability to use both pot still and column still in our blends.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the distillers that I know that have used both and used both frequently, they're like, I love a pot still for what we can do, and the barometric pressure changes things, and it's got much more of a like craft involved with it, you know, whereas the column still, they're like, dude, I love it, you know, but it's Novocaine, it splits hairs, it does exactly what it's going to do, there's not a whole lot of variance, you kind of... It is what it is, you know. So you have to really respect the craft that it takes to do a pot still. So, for sure. I'm really just, man.
this sucker is amazing.
I really
absolutely
do. I'm just enjoying it so much.
I've seen Scott going for his fourth or fifth pour of it.
Yeah.
I see the bottle. It's almost half gone now. I've only taken one.
I hope we gave you more than one bottle.
We only have one.
We only have one.
I mean, you can tell Sierra to send me some more, you know, at any time. I'd say I need some Glens, though. I've never been that far out, and I want to plan a trip out west with the crew one time, and
oh god, I
stop
would
at a couple places
that.
In Colorado, and then head out to see you guys, because I've been a massive fan of High West since you guys, you know, opened up, and I kind of love the story, you know, the old West town and that type of thing, and it's just kind of cool. And when Midwinters came out, the first few iterations that came out, like, it was one of those things that, like, totally fanboyed. Like, I was, like, all over the place on those things. And it's odd because I'm not typically a finished, you know, product drinker.
No, you're not.
And then I think that expression gave me enough, I guess, courage to go out and try other people's, you know, different things in that situation. So now I've become a much bigger fan of some of the people that are local that are doing a ton of finishes and things to that nature. But man, I've always been a massive
gateway drug. Is that what I'm hearing?
I will say High West was the Midwinters was definitely my gateway drug to. I guess dabbling more into finishes than anything else for sure. So I mean, so when Sierra, you know, hit me with this opportunity, I'm like, yes. When do we do it? How do we do it? Like, I'm like, we've not done virtually in forever, so it was one of those catch 22. So I was like, well, right. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
So that's awesome. I have a question. I'm sorry, everybody keeps interrupting me. I've been wanting to talk for a while.
It's unusual.
So in terms of this particular one. How is it that you prefer to drink it? Do you prefer it neat? Do you prefer it with a drop of water or with an ice cube or a whiskey stone? What is your typical way of drinking any of the bourbons or ryes?
Great question. I just want to come out and say, in my opinion, there's no wrong way to drink a whiskey. So well,
absolutely.
If you like it with
cop
ice,
out.
And
cop
you
out,
like it with whiskey sauce, right? I'll get there. Just give me a
second. So legit, my whole thing is to each their own. Everybody can drink it however they want to. I just like to know other people's opinions.
Totally. So, 100 proof, it's not that big, right? So, we typically at my house, at the winter household, will drink it neat.
Okay.
We use these, you're talking about Glencairn. So at High West, we use these little teeny tulip glasses.
Oh, cool.
When we do sensory, we'll pour 20 mils in a tulip glass and have a watch glass over the top for a half hour. That's kind of our SOP. But when I'm drinking whiskey at the house, I also use a glass like this. I drink it neat and enjoy every last bit of it. When we did the release party for Bottled and Bond, our beverage manager, Holly Booth, came up with a spin on an old fashioned, okay. And I honestly can't remember exactly what the recipe was, but she used Bottled and Bond in that recipe, and it was awesome.
Okay.
So at $80 a bottle, it is an expensive, it's an expensive old fashioned, no doubt.
It's on up there.
It makes a great old fashioned.
I've made $150 old fashioned, so I mean, 80s, I mean, it's in the ballpark.
So a couple follow-ups. We were kind of talking about kind of the barrels and the importance of the barrels. Have you thought about or have you done any just double oaking? Now, I know that there's many groups that have done it out there. Is that not going to be your jam or is that some type of experimental that you just haven't gotten around to and kind of thought about?
I think it definitely is not something that we played with a whole lot. And we don't right now have any plans to play with. I will say, however, that we just received two 15 barrel, so 500 gallon American oak fooders from Fooder Crafters. We got egg shaped fooders. And so we have bourbon in one of those, and we've got rye in another, both our Pocketville rye in the other. And so we are playing with some fooder age products right now. We've got some concrete tanks on order that should be here in a couple of weeks. Tara Lindley is my partner in crime. She's I'm the distilling director and she's our blend sensory director. But that's kind of her baby, her project. She comes from the wine side. So we're interested to play around with that a little bit and micro oxygenation, things like that. The long winded way of saying, you know, we have not played with double wood stuff to date.
Okay.
Not saying we won't, we just haven't done it.
What? No, perfectly fine. And I think one thing I do want to follow up on that is that, and I might be beating Scott to the punch, is without giving much away, do you have anything exciting coming up on the horizon?
We always have exciting stuff coming up on the horizon.
All right, so super exciting.
That you can tell us about, because I mean, there's some stuff that you're in experimental phase that you just don't know about yet.
Yeah. So, we just released the 2024 Bure, which is fantastic.
I know, so it's sold out. I couldn't get it.
Oh, really? Dang. you got to come out to the distillery. All right. But
it's a bit of a drive.
We've got a 10-year-old Pottsville whiskey in that from High West, which is kind of a cool thing. We did that. We've done it the last 3 years. Looking forward into the year, we've got an interesting collaboration with Casa Noble in plan. So that's our tequila brand that we are in the same portfolio with through Constellation. So we have a rye finished in tequila barrels that'll be very interesting, I think. But I think that's where we've got a couple other things coming, but you have to have me on another time.
Fine.
So let's dive a little bit more on the tequila. Burra.
Yeah.
I don't need tequila. We call it tequila in the Mitten household. tequila is not in my wheelhouse. I don't do tequila. I don't do scotch.
We know you don't do scotch.
And I've had a handful of gins that I'm like, I'll live in that neighborhood. Talk a little bit more about the Burra, if you want to, because you said that one's coming up right here in the next, couple of months.
Yeah, it just hit shelves.
Oh, just hit shelves.
Oh, okay.
So, yep. Yeah, this Burra is an annual release. It's tough. It's tough to scale. It's tough to produce a lot of that because, again, we're super picky with the flavor profile. And it's 100%. The 100% of that blend is over 10 years old. So Burra is a blend of bourbon and rye. And every year, we play around with the ratio just a little bit to kind of, like we talked about, like set off some of those personalities year over year. But every year, it's a big, chewy celebration of old whiskey. So we've got High West Pot Still Rye. We've got a couple different column producers in it this year, but every year it's delicious. And I think this year we may have outdone ourselves.
Good deal.
Okay.
Good deal.
So I have a quick question because we haven't really touched on this in terms of the flavor profile that you prefer. What is that?
So I think we can break it down a little bit. So for bourbons, I am a high rye guy.
Right.
So we have quite a few mash bills in like the 36 range somewhere on either side of that I really, really like. And that's other distillate streams that we're producing at the distillery kind of follow that as well. So I like that. I find high wheat bourbons to be a teeny bit flabby sometimes. They're just not my... It's not my cup of tea. For rye, I really like big, punchy rye whiskeys. I think that this Bottled and Bond, the big botanical profile, it fits right in there with me. And I like the depth that it brings. For malt whiskey, I am not like a Lafroig guy. Not a Lafroig guy. I'm hard pressed to be, Bowmore, but like a Highland Park, like the kind of the Highlands, just like that little essence of long forgotten campfire, we'll say that fits right in my flavor wheelhouse.
What are the kind of flavors that you prefer? Do you prefer like the apple, the peach, the stone fruits, those kind of things?
Yeah. So something in our rendezvous that I really like, I get a kind of like a grilled apricot note. And I love that.
Okay.
When you get super flowery and, grassy
field green type thing,
field greens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I think is maybe a little bit too much top note for me.
Okay.
But once you start kind of building those fruit esters, I think for me, that's more compelling.
Okay.
I think. And I look for that.
Okay.
All right, before we get off here, I always try to pigeonhole people into this question,
here we go.
So absolutely.
If you're not drinking High West, what are you drinking? If I was going to take you to the local bar and I asked you whatever you want, we're going to buy it and we're going to drink it together, what are you picking?
Interesting question. Mm-hmm. One of my classmates from Harriet Watt, Owen Martin, is the master distiller for Angel's Envy. I pay pretty close attention to what he's up to. So I am a frequent supporter of Angel's Envy. I have been paying pretty close attention to New Riff. I think they're doing some kind of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a very soft spot in my heart for single malt. So like Stranahan's and Westland, I think from the American single malt sort of, art of American whiskey, I think that they're pretty compelling also. So that's four. How about that?
Perfect.
I think that sounds good.
I love it.
I do have one question. All right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We really enjoy it, but we all have, at least in our household, we have the favorite. We're more of the rye finished in the Caribbean rum barrels.
Yep.
Which are you more of the bourbon or rye side from Angels?
I'm more of the rye side. The rum barrel finish is one of my favorites also.
Okay.
Yeah, I like them all. I think I gravitate more that way. Maybe that's because High West is you know,
is kind of more rye house. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to, with the Angels Envy, I got the iced cider cask.
Oh, cool.
My cute little patootie stood outside for, I don't remember how long, but I stood out there. It was cold. People were like, because I mean, I work in healthcare, so I was in scrubs and just a jacket. And they're like, man, you're brave. Why are you too cold or anything? And I'm like, yeah, fine, whatever. Give me my whiskey. Give me my rye. And that was about 2 years ago. And I've managed, I think I've got like yay amount left.
Gotta save it when you can.
Absolutely. But the bottle itself is so pretty. I'm going to keep that.
Yeah. The cider casks, I think, are really interesting. We've done some work with Calvados, mm-hmm. Which I think fits our profile really, really well. I think brandy, cider, those bringing those fruit flavors back into the blend and pushing the esters that are already in the whiskey, I think is an interesting way to bring new flavors to your blend, to your product.
Now, one thing that, you know, you mentioned on the from the bottle, and I'll have to say, you know, the High West, you know, bottle really gives really a good homage to the Wild West.
Yes,
and
it
those
does.
Old style bottles.
Looks like blown glass.
Totally.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. We, maybe real quick, you know, when David and Jane Perkins, our fearless founders, were trying to come up with ideas for the brand, they watched High Plains Drifter, which is a Clint Eastwood movie. And in that movie, he takes a whiskey bottle and he pulls the cork out with his teeth and spits it on the ground. And that was kind of one of the inspirations for our bottle, and especially for our cork, is, you know, David wanted something that was super chunky that you could really sink your teeth into.
Absolutely. Well, the juice that's inside is incredible. I haven't found like.
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate that.
So, hey, we've taken up enough of your time. So what I'd like to do to finish this thing off for you, just to be respectful of the time you've given us today, is just what do you want people to know about High West? Like, is there a way that you want them to find your products? Do you want to talk about where you're distributed? Are you guys in all 50 states? You know, just kind of in general that. And then if, like, people want to come out and do a tour or do things like that, how do they do all those things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I direct you to Drink High West as our Instagram handle, highwest.com for our website. We have a great newsletter. So if you're looking for kind of the first info on new releases and tickets to parties, things like that, I'd definitely sign up for our whiskey club. High West is big on hospitality, so please come and visit us if you're ever in the area. Next time we do this, we got to do it in person.
Yes.
The Nelson Cottage, we'll say.
Okay.
We've got a couple different dining options. Downtown Park City, super fun restaurant. The still is right in the middle of everything. Great food, great cocktails. We do great brunch up at the Big Distillery. Come and visit us and come for one of our release parties. I mean, the Midwinter Night's Dram party is the best party you will go to all year. There's people on stilts, there's fire dancers, there's, you know, LED angels, the whole bit. It is very, very fun.
Oh, cool.
That sounds great.
Absolutely.
Now, I will say, man, when you say you make awesome brunch now, you know, we are from the Midwest /South. So, I mean, it's hard to beat biscuits and gravy down here, man. Like, I don't know what y'all are serving for brunch, but, you know, I'm going to have to take your word until I show up, right?
All right. Come check it out.
Fair enough. So, Isaac, thank you so much for being on the show. We greatly appreciate your time. You know, if you need anything, you know, you can always find Bourbon Barrel Talk on Instagram, you know, the Facebook or the X, whatever that thing is. And then you can hit the subscribe button so you can get our episodes when they hit as soon as possible, whether it's on iTunes or Spotify or those type of things. So that is Scott, Barbara, our guest Isaac, Nick, and then I think that's it. We're signing out. So peace off.
Peace out.